argument is Stokes versus Board of Education. Ms. Masters.
May it please the Court. Karna Leader and Nyokia Stokes, two individuals who had never been arrested before, were arrested for disturbing the peace after Johnny Banks bore out false complaints alleging that they had knowingly and intentionally fought and used loud profanity. On appeal, the defendants have abandoned any argument that Mr. Banks had probable cause to swear out the complaints making those allegations. Instead, they defend summary judgment in their favor by raising new claims that probable cause existed based on Carnalita and Nyokia's silence or alternatively based upon Nyokia's crying. Today I will address why these claims are not properly before the court and, even if proper, lack merit, and we will stand on the briefs for the remaining issues. The defendants, in essence, asked this court to hold that an arrest based upon a false complaint can be justified by relying upon allegations never made in that complaint and, indeed, facts that are contrary to the complaint allegations. So, for instance, in this case, the complaint alleged disturbance of the peace by using loud profanity. Now the defendants want to justify arrest based upon failure to speak. Not only did the defendants waive this argument by failing to support to any citing supporting authority that they could make that argument, but we are aware of no case law holding that you could tell a different story on appeal, relying upon facts outside the scope of the complaint, and then change what's a false arrest based upon false allegations into a proper arrest. And as Mr. Banks' testimony and other admissions of record make clear, the allegations that Carnalita and Nyokia engaged in fighting and used profanity were baseless. They were entirely speculative. He has admitted he had no facts within his knowledge to support them. Even if the court were to consider the defendant's new claims on appeal, their claims lack merit. An arrest for disorderly conduct requires an unreasonable act that is committed knowingly or intentionally. On appeal...
Is the text of the disorderly conduct ordinance, is that, or statute, whatever it is that in these papers?
Your Honor, I believe we forgot to put that in the appendix.
Pardon?
I believe it is not in the appendix.
It's an Illinois statute.
It's the Illinois statute. It is cited in the text of the brief.
My impression is it's extremely broadly worded.
It is broadly worded, but then Illinois...
You're not challenging it as unconstitutional or anything.
No, we have not raised a challenge that it is unconstitutional. But what has happened is the way the law is applied is that it requires, in order to have a conviction on disorderly conduct, the complaint must allege specific wrongful acts. And there were specific wrongful acts alleged here with the use of loud profanity and fighting. But what has happened is that Mr. Banks went into his deposition and admitted in his testimony that he never saw my clients fight. He never saw them strike anybody. In fact, he
didn't. Well, does he have to? I mean, can't you draw an inference?
He's not entitled to an inference on summary judgment.
I don't understand you. That doesn't make sense. The question is whether, you know, he had reason to believe that this disorderly conduct had been committed. You don't?
Well, he doesn't.
You can base your complaint on an inference, can't you?
You can't base your complaint on speculation, which is what happened here, because Mr. Banks...
The question, is it inference or is it speculation?
It is speculation, Your Honor, because Mr. Banks conducted no investigation, and there was testimony that he didn't witness what happened. So he has nothing from which...
They usually conduct investigation when they complain to the police about something.
Well, he didn't talk to any witnesses.
Well, generally, you don't talk to witnesses if you see something or you think you see something or hear something and you write and you complain to the police. You don't conduct an investigation first.
Well, Your Honor, to the extent that that might be true, the problem in this case is that there's plenty of testimony that Mr. Banks didn't see what happened, including Mr. Banks' own deposition testimony, in which he states that he did not hear my clients use loud profanity, although he swore out a complaint saying they did, and he did not see them fight. He didn't see them strike or hit anybody, and yet he swore out a complaint saying he did. And that's why we're here saying summary judgment was entirely inappropriate, because he had nothing on this record
Ms. Masters, if a person just makes an oral complaint to the police officer, you can leave it up to the police officer to figure out whether that's probable cause to arrest somebody for disturbing the peace or something else. In this case, we've got these complaints in which Mr. Banks signed it saying that each of these folks, quote, and this is the written part, did knowingly and intentionally fight with another person and refused to stop. The defendant also used loud, profane language, causing a crowd of students to gather, thereby disturbing the calm of the school, thereby provoking a breach of the peace. Whose language is that? Does the record tell us who actually, that's not a principal's kind of language. That sounds to me like a prosecutor's or a police officer's.
Your Honor, the answer to your question about does the record say who wrote that is it does not. It's not in the record whether Johnny Banks personally wrote that out. He signed it, mm-hmm. So it is his complaint, and the defendants have not ever contested otherwise. Mm-hmm. So he signs on to those allegations and yet goes into his deposition and says, I didn't hear loud profanity from my clients, and I didn't see them strike or hit anyone. And he even says he didn't see Carnalita, he has no recollection of Carnalita being involved in the physical. So for those reasons, among others, it's entirely inappropriate to grant summary judgment and say that there's no disputed material fact as to whether...
Is it your argument that to make a complaint to the police, you need probable cause to believe there's a crime?
Well, that is certainly part of our argument, yes. He needed probable cause.
I don't believe that. You're not going to have any complaints to the police anymore if you have a probable cause requirement.
No,
you see something suspicious, right? You don't know whether there's a crime or a probable cause. Something suspicious that bothers you. You call the police. You say they should look into that or something like that. That's not actionable.
What is actionable is swearing out a false complaint, which is the Acevedo.
No, I understand. I can understand that. I don't understand, or I don't agree with your general blanket proposition that no one can make any form of complaint to the police without having probable cause to think there's been a crime.
You have to have at least a reasonable basis, in this case, to sign out a complaint.
I don't think so. I mean, if you're malicious, it's one thing. But I mean, we encourage people, if they're concerned, suspicious conduct. Look, people call up police because there's noise in the, it's noisy. They can't sleep or something.
Your Honor,
can they be sued for malicious prosecution or something? Or
whether or not they could be sued for that is outside the scope of this case, where Mr. Banks actually writes out and signs.
I know you keep saying that. I'm just questioning your broader proposition, which is that no one may ever complain to the police without probable cause to believe that there's a crime.
But I think that takes our proposition a little too far. What we are saying is you can't sign out a complaint against somebody, a false complaint with no basis. And when you sign out a complaint that is contrary to your own recollection of what happens, and when you haven't seen it, and you haven't talked to anybody about what happened, there's no basis for that complaint. And that is improper under this court's law. The case of Acevedo.
Carnalita called the police, right?
Yes, and Carnalita calls the police to report the crime.
So the police arrive. In the meantime, I assume Banks is trying to referee or do something or other. And I don't think everything stopped when Carnalita called the police. I think it's when they arrived at all of this, whatever else happened, isn't it? And then they handcuff everybody or take them downtown and let them go. But I can't put myself in that position. It's obviously pretty distressful for everybody. These ladies fighting in front of these kids, and the principal hearing the commotion comes out. Whatever reason Carnalita called the police was obviously, I guess she thought, what's her name, Scott, was attacking her daughter and her.
Right, there are...
I mean, I'm sure they would have been happy, she'd have been happy to see Scott taken downtown.
Well, certainly, because she calls the police to report that her daughter, Nyokia, has been assaulted by...
And the whole problem is he took both of them, took them all, everybody in the fight, without discerning who started and who shouldn't have, and all that. I assume they decided that after they got him out of there, and I don't know what happened.
Well, Your Honor, before my clients were carted away, somebody needed there needed to be some determination as to whether they had engaged in a wrongful act, and that determination was not made. I see I'm running into my rebuttal time, so...
Okay, thank you, Ms. Masters. Ms. Lauder?
Morning, judges, counsel. First, I'd like to say that we haven't abandoned our claim that there was a physical altercation here. Carnalita testified that when Principal Banks came into the office, he saw, or what was there when he came in was that Ebony Stokes was on her buttocks on the floor. And I think that anyone would assume when they saw that, and she said, Nyokia said that she had just disentangled her hands from Scott's hair. So when Banks comes in and sees one person on the floor and knows that the other person has asked for a meeting just that morning, and he knows he wasn't summoned to come to that meeting except ever by either of the people who are supposed to be at the meeting, and then he knows that he was summoned because 30 little school children were crying in fear, you have to put yourself in his position and think, I would think, and I think any normal person would think, that Nyokia had some responsibility for the fact that Ebony Scott was on the floor on her buttocks. That's not the, you know, posture of someone who's not an aggressor or who's not receiving any resistance. So we haven't abandoned our claim that there was a physical altercation. Second, the Illinois statute on disorderly conduct is on page 22 of our brief, and it says that disorderly conduct occurs when anyone knowingly does any act in such an unreasonable manner as to alarm or disturb another and to provoke a breach of the peace. Now, we're not saying that it was unreasonable. We're not saying that they breached the peace by being silent, which is what the plaintiffs seem to be saying. We're saying that they're criticizing Principal Banks for not conducting an investigation, and yet what Nyokia says is he came to the back to try to talk to her, and he said, she says, he came to the back and said, I'm going to arrest both you and your mother. But Carnalita says he never said anything to her at all. Carnalita completely disputes what her mother, her daughter says. So Nyokia says he came to the back and said, you know, I'm going to have to arrest both of you. Nyokia didn't exercise her right to remain silent. In fact, she began to say, oh, don't arrest my mother. She didn't do anything. But she didn't say, don't arrest me because I didn't do anything. Obviously, he would have seen that, you know, Ebony Scott was on the floor, so it would be hard for her to say she hadn't done anything at all. The second inconsistency is that when he went... First, Carnalita says, oh, I never heard him say anything to the police. I never heard Principal Banks say a word to the police. And then she completely changes her story and says, oh, yes, I did hear him tell the police that I should be arrested. He wanted me arrested because I refused, because I shouldn't be at the school, she says. But
the particular argument that your opponent makes is that what he said in his report, complaint to the police, whatever it was inconsistent with his later, you know, failure to remember anything about...
Well, I don't think that's necessarily true. I mean, this was a very distressful situation, as you said. He comes into the office. This is a man who's responsible for the safety of 450 children from preschool to eighth grade. And all the parents who are in the building, the 25 teachers, he comes into this chaotic situation. He's probably just trying to... And he says himself, I was just trying to establish order. What he may remember years later in a deposition, I don't think we want to look at the facts as they appeared to him at the time he came into the main office. I think what he remembered years later, trying to be truthful, is he might not have exactly remembered what happened at that time.
Is he entitled to have relied on information that others provided him at the time?
Absolutely. And plaintiffs try to make a big point of the fact that he should have listened to Michael Bell. Michael Bell, the custodian. But Michael Bell doesn't help their case. Michael Bell says all four of them were yelling, three of them were cursing, and all of them were tearing at each other's hair. So I don't see how Michael, you know, having talked to Michael Bell would have really helped their case. And it's somewhat hypocritical for them to criticize him for not conducting an investigation when neither one of them is willing to tell him their side. So I'm asking you to look at it from Principal Banks' point of view, someone who came into a chaotic situation, was trying to establish order, and not to punish him for doing that. And I ask you to affirm the award of summary judgment.
Hey, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Lauder. Ms. Masters?
Just briefly, this case is before the court on summary judgment, and there are genuine...
It's pretty clear that this complaint that he signed, he didn't write it.
Your Honor...
That does not appear to be his handwriting. And it's, you know, it's must have been a police officer, right? It's not the way a layperson would talk, anyway.
He signed...
In fact, it has the exact language of the... It has the exact language of the disorderly conduct statute, so it obviously wouldn't be his language.
Your Honor, he signs the complaints, and the defendants have not made any argument that he shouldn't be held accountable for it. Their arguments are that the facts support it. And in that regard, this case is before the panel on summary judgment, and there are genuinely disputed issues of fact. We dispute that he admitted he didn't talk to anybody about what happened. There are disputes about whether he saw what happened. Michael Bell, the janitor they just mentioned, testified that Banks wasn't there. He didn't see what happened. That's what my clients say. Under the Chelios case, under the Payne case, under Poragashi, that alone is enough to dispute summary judgment. They talked about investigation. If you don't ask people questions, and my clients have stated he did not ask them what happened. They cannot come up here on appeal.
You wouldn't have a case if it weren't for this complaint, right?
Our case is based on him swearing out the complaint, yes.
That is the basis.
Yes.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel.
Thank you. We ask the court reverse summary judgment.
And court.